You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. I bet you every one of us at one time or another have had to visit an emergency room and wondered, geez, you know, what's this chaos? What's going on? What's going through people's minds? What's it really like to have to spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day, maybe 5, 6, 7 days a week working within the boundaries of an emergency room? And like I said, every one of us at one point or another has had to visit an emergency room, and that question certainly goes through your mind. And that's why my guest this week is MD Jay Baruch. His new book is Tornado of Life, A Doctor's Journey Through Constraints and Creativity in the ER. And what Jay has done is what I guess many of us kind of think in the back of our minds. Geez, if somebody could just put between the pages of a book or make a documentary on what runs through people's minds, what does the doctor deal with on a day-to-day basis? And, you know, at the end of the day, what do they do to kind of break away from all that and relax? So we'll be talking with Jay for the next half hour and getting his insights on that. Hey, Jay, nice to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Al. It's great to be here with you and your listeners.
You know, you and I talked a little bit before broadcast, and again, I can't emphasize it enough that I have sat, and I've told you this, in an ER, either for myself or for a family member or whatnot, and you just see some of the patients coming in or just somebody just sitting there, and you think, they look okay, but you've lived with this for many years now, right?
I've been at this for close to 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know this. So you've seen the multitude. You've seen serious cases. You've seen people just come in with maybe a splinter. But the important thing, and what I loved about the book, and I said this to you earlier, was this is not a book that describes arteries or muscular systems running through the body. What Jay has done, and I'm going to let him talk and expand on that, is to talk about his personal experiences, the people's, their emotions, their lives, and the interaction that he's had with people over those 30 years in the confines and in the context of emergency rooms. And I'm assuming, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, that that's perhaps the reason for even writing the book, because you had so many experiences and so many thoughts in your mind about all the people that you had attended to, that it made for interesting reading, which it has, right?
Yeah, I hope so, right? I'll leave that up to your listeners and hopefully future readers of the book. I thank you for the introduction and your kind words, Al. I have always written generally as a way to sort of process my thoughts and my feelings. I always have found that I work my way through challenging situations, whether it was in the ER or in life. On the page, I just think differently on the page. I see things in myself and my own thinking, both good and bad, by actually getting very specific and writing sentences. And it just so happens that, you know, in what I do for a living, which is work in the emergency department, there are a lot of situations where sometimes I'm challenged to figure out what the right thing to do. In fact, sometimes like the right thing to do is the very essence of the challenge, you know. For years I've been sort of trying to capture my thinking on the page really for myself. And over time, some of these have found their way into more formal articles that have sort of entered, have gone out into the world, and they seem to have resonated with people in different ways, and eventually they all sort of we brought them together in this book, Tornado of Life.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, Jay, and I just want to get your sense on this, a Tornado of Life. People, you know, some people may say, "Geez, is that about bad weather, climate change?" No, but it is an interesting title. And the more I thought about it, this is my own take, and that's why I want to get your input on this. I'm thinking, you know what? I mean, you guys get swept up. Like I said, in any given day, you don't know what's going to come at you. It can come at you hot and heavy. You can get, you know, one case after another, and it can all be very serious. Other days, I'm sure you say, geez, it's been a relatively quiet day. So I'm assuming tornado of, and because you're dealing with human beings on a regular basis and the focus of the book on those patients and their lives. So I'm assuming, to me, it's an apropos title, but is that how you saw it?
Well, thank you for that. I actually didn't. I've been living with this book for a couple of years, and the title was actually right at the top of the project from the very beginning. And I didn't see it in this such a broad context, and yet I should have. I think I had somewhere deep down inside of me. I saw the metaphorical implications. The title in specific actually emerged from a very specific moment, which I described in the book, when I was caring for a patient who was just really going through a very, very tough stretch with just a bunch of serial things going on in her life that were just terrible. You know, and unlike, you know, many of us who perhaps are a little bit more fortunate, you know, we have a floor or a safety net that's going to catch us. Like, she wasn't so lucky, and this happened, and this happened, and that happened, and then. And it was really hard to get her to describe what she was going through. She had a bunch of different challenges, like substance use and some mental health problems and some medical problems as well. And when she finally spoke, she said to me, I'm just stuck in a tornado of life.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, and I thought that was just such, you know, what a powerful, first of all, it's just a powerful image. And I also think it's one that resonates with so much of the experience of many people who come to the emergency department, and perhaps to various degrees. Like, we all sometimes feel that for slight isolated periods. But it was such a beautiful phrase, and it just goes to show you that, you know, people are experiencing just some great pain and great troubles, which is also capable of such extraordinary poetry to describe that experience.
Yeah, all I can think of, Jay, is that as you described, she had such a hard life and she had so many issues that in her mind on a daily basis, she felt like she was, you know, wrapped up in a tornado, just spinning around, and it doesn't seem to be able to get off of this ride. And something else I want to bring in, and again, get your feelings on this, because this is a quote from the book, and I thought this was very, very telling. To be an emergency physician, any clinician really, is to be a professional listener of stories. Each patient presents a story. Finding the heart of that story is the doctor's most critical task. And I think a lot of people, Jay, and that's why I wanted to get your sense on this, a lot of people overlook that. Okay, when we went in to see Dr. Baruch, he took care of everything, done, bum, bum, bum. It's not quite that easy. I think people misread that when a lot of people go into the emergency room, as you said, there's a story to their lives, especially if they're sitting there and maybe there needs to be some diagnostics taken. So you really get the opportunity, and it's one-on-one in many cases, you really do get the opportunity to listen to them, and that's such a big part of it. And I think a lot of people think, oh, he taped my leg, or he stitched up this, or they took some x-rays, I'm okay. It goes far beyond that, doesn't it, Jay?
Yeah, it goes, yeah, exactly, and for many different reasons. So, in a classic aphorism in medicine, I don't know to what degree it's true, is that 90% of a medical diagnosis can be, 80 to 90% of a medical diagnosis can, really depends on the history, and the physical exam, the things that are within the confines of the human interaction. And the history is being so critically important. But in the book, I describe how sometimes a history can be very different from a patient's story. you know, like a patient history, at least as it's told and taught in medical education and in medical training, typically centers on sort of gathering information, symptoms, aspects of different aspects of your life, that's pertinent, past medical history, past medical problems. Maybe you have a fever, like you travel someplace, those sort of things. But listening for a story is something that's very different. I mean, listening for a story actually situates a person in their lives and puts this present experience in context of who this person is, what do they want, what do they desire, and what's getting in the way, in what way these symptoms or in what ways are this experience interfering with that. You know, so for example, you know, someone who comes in with a pinky injury, who's a concert violinist who comes in all distressed, you know, you might say, oh, it's a pinky injury, but it means so much to this person whose livelihood and whose passion depends upon the pinky. When, for example, someone else who perhaps, you know, works construction or does something or just works at a computer, doesn't really need the hands as much or the pinky as much to work in such an exquisite fashion, it might be less of an impact on their lives and might be experienced in a very different way. And the other thing, Hal, is that, you know, we take for granted how hard it can be to tell certain stories, right? People are going through experiences that can be embarrassing, anxiety provoking, fearful. A 30-year-old who comes in with chest pain, which typically is not going to be cardiac in origin, heart in origin, can be that if someone has a bad family history of my uncle had a heart attack at 32, my father had a heart attack at 33 or something like in that. So you don't know like what the person is experiencing unless you're thinking about it and talking to them and engaging with them in a manner that shows that you're trying to find out what this experience means to them. Yeah. And I think oftentimes when people feel like they're not heard, patients feel they're not heard, oftentimes it's this part. It's like, because what they're really trying to tell us is not necessarily what we're listening or what we're hearing to, what we're hearing. And that can be very distressing to our patients.
And I can tell you, Jay, how many people that I know personally who have visited an ER say, the first thing they say is, he or she listened to what I had to say, even if it wasn't necessarily directly related to their malady or whatever they're experiencing at that moment, but just to be a great listener. And I just want to hold off for a minute just to remind folks that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. If you're just joining us, welcome. If you've been with us right from the beginning, my guest this week is Jay Baruch, MD and author of the new book, Tornado of Life, A Doctor's Journey Through Constraints and Creativity in the ER. Jay is also a professor of emergency medicine at Brown University. Jay, something you just, you know, that's what you just said to me would seem so vital. And I don't know, I mean, you alluded to the fact that in medical school, I guess they would depend on the course and who was the instructor at the time. But to me, it would seem like some time needs to be spent on, look, you're all practitioners, medical practitioners. But at the same time, you also have to be great listeners because you may find the root of the problem if you allow the patient to elaborate on either their current life, their past life, the history of family members. And I can't imagine any other way of really coming to and correct me if I'm wrong, a diagnosis more accurate than letting them, you know, talk a little bit about the history of themselves or their family. That's certainly going to make your life a little bit easier, right?
Yeah, and I have to say that medical education has made huge strides. I mean, it's always been a sort of a part of medical education. I feel that over the last, decade or so, there's been a real focus on the importance of listening, and there's been a growth of what we call like medical humanities or health humanities programs in certain medical schools across the country, which also focus on sort of the patient's narrative and how do we sort of think differently about the stories that patients are telling us. So we're moving in the right direction, and you're absolutely right about the that statement about just letting people talk a little bit longer. I mean, there's notorious literature about how physicians cut off patients prematurely. I mean, the data is always a little bit different, but you know, either way, it's too short. You know, 12 seconds, 18 seconds, 21 seconds, but it's too short. And then there's literature that shows that if you just let them speak a little bit longer, you can sometimes get the very information that you were looking for. And it's not just listening, Al. I think it's also learning to sort of ask the right questions. And the challenge I find is that oftentimes we're listening so much for those little details to make a diagnosis that it sometimes impacts how we listen. Because what if you can't make a diagnosis? What if the patient's symptoms are all over the place, right? But they're still having a profound experience. Now, our job is still how can I respond meaningfully to this patient? How can I recognize what the patient is going through? How can I then adapt and adjust and perhaps provide some suggestions and to move their experience forward? And that's where I feel like thinking about the patient's, what the patient is telling us from a perspective of story and saying, listen, how do I move your story forward? I know I can't tell you what you have, and maybe you've been to five other doctors, and they can't tell you either, but how can I validate your experience, acknowledge what you're going through, perhaps even just listen and help you understand your own experience just by you telling it, and just maybe asking some different types of questions so you can perhaps understand your own experience in a little bit of a different way and give you the wherewithal and maybe even the pep talk to move forward.
I think that's the crux of everything. In fact, you even talk in the book, you mention it, more technology, more tests, and more data won't work if the doctor doesn't get the story right. And I can't imagine anybody arguing with that. And we've all, and I've had this experience, and I'm sure you've heard this from a million of your patients over your career, that you know, they were cut off by family members advocating for them. Or they just ask some pointed questions themselves, and we're told, that's it. We're done here, and I will get the results to you. I think, Jay, and I'm not an MD, but I would think if I were in your position, being able to first and foremost win the trust of that patient by allowing them to elaborate a little bit more, even if it may not directly shed light on what's happening to them medically. It may indeed put them in a position of being so comfortable that it makes it easier for you in terms of diagnosing. Have you had the experience of having to work shoulder to shoulder with practitioners who don't have that similar philosophy, and has that made it difficult for you personally?
Well, I've been that person. You know, it's like we're all, you know, that's the whole thing, Al. Like I and one of the points I try to bring out and through many of the narrative essays in the book is that like I've been at this for a long time and I'm wildly imperfect. You know, I can be incredibly compassionate and be curt during the same shift. You know, I mean, we're all human beings, you know, and I feel that we just don't give ourselves this slack. Like we, in an objective sense, we say you shouldn't behave this way, you shouldn't say this, but you know, we operate under really challenging conditions. That's where the constraints part comes in, right? And, you know, we're managing so many patients simultaneously. We're expected to make some high-stakes decisions, oftentimes with incomplete information. We're dealing with people who have personalities, many of whom are upset and justifiably so because the system isn't in their favor, or they just waited for an X number of hours that would make you yourself angry. And then, like, you know, we're just trying to do our best, and sometimes things hit a nerve. So the answer to your question is yes, and that person is me often. Oftentimes. And many of these essays, I mean, I don't come off looking great, you know, and part of that is because, as I said at the start of the show, so much of my writing begins with me trying to sort of identify why I behave in a certain way or certain challenging situations that were hard to work through. And to do that in an honest and transparent way means, you know, acknowledging my own warts. And so all we can do is try to recognize the fact that we're trying to do our best. I think that we're meaning well. And ideally in the best possible world, Al, you know, the healthcare system conditions would be such that it would allow us to give our patients a little bit more time to allow us to perhaps go to the bathroom. I'm not seeing someone with my bladder about to burst, or having not eaten, you know, for 7 hours, which, you know, we all know how it feels. You know, we all know how we act to each other, our loved ones, when we're hangry, you know, and then it's like 4 a.m. You know, like I'm gonna work overnight. You know, I say this all the time. I'm like, you know, so I'm gonna work overnight Sunday and Monday. And the person who is seeing patients at, like, let's say 11:30 p.m. this Sunday might be very different than the person who's on Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. when I'm coming off my second overnight shift. And that's why I wrote this book, because these are challenges that I think we all face in our lives and the work that we do and the challenges that we face at home. We all have those moments when we behave in ways that are not, quote unquote, not us, but they are us. But how do we work through those to hopefully recognize why and improve how our reactions in the future?
Well, as they say, Jay, it is to be human is to have nobody's perfect. It's funny you talked about the bladder or the empty stomach. I had a dentist many years ago, and when he would do a filling on those occasions when I knew he had had breakfast, you could hear the gurgling in the stomach, and he did everything in his power, but it was right, you know, he'd be leaning right into my ear, and it was like I'm listening to the inside of this guy's intestines. I just want you to fill the filling and let me go here. It's really incredible. That's why, I mean, it's so, what I love about the book is that you bring that to light, and it's like, oh, it makes it lighthearted, and not, I'm not saying less serious. There's no question. If somebody comes in with an emergency, they that's first and foremost. There's no question that's your focus. But as we wind down, I got to get your sense on this, because you hit on something that I think is just so important. A person comes in, and it's not a heart attack. It's not cancer. It's not. It's nothing. It's bruising, and I'm just using it as a raw example. And by the time you get done, after reading the book, I'm thinking, you know, by the time Jay gets done talking to this person, he may get a sense that they're coming from an abusive relationship or an abusive environment. And no, you can't step in as a law enforcement official. That's not your role. But it does give you the insight and wonder that, you know, can we get this person some services to help, because maybe that environment, they'll be back here again and again if this isn't cleared up. So allowing them to talk has got to open doors and allow you to really focus more on, you know, not only today's treatment, but how we may prevent this from happening in the future and down the road. But as I said, we've only got a few minutes, but let me ask you this. Has the book changed you in any way and your approach to medicine?
It has, you know, it's allowed me, by working things out on the page, it has actually allowed me to given me insight into myself. So when I have experienced certain situations, I actually have, it's almost like I've already done the simulation in my brain, and I know some of the tender parts in my own personality and some of the raw nerves, and I've become a little bit better at recognizing that. I think that's really just a product of just writing.
Yeah.
And the ability to put, you know, to work through things in a deep way on the page.
Right.
And so, yeah, I feel the book itself has allowed me to see myself, to objectify myself, and while also getting a little bit deeper and hopefully allowing me to be a better human and a better doctor for my patients.
Well said. Again, the book is Tornado of Life, A Doctor's Journey Through Constraints and Creativity in the ER. My guest has been the author, Jay Baruch. Jay, real quick, if people want to pose questions, get more information about you, is there a website or an email, a way they can reach out to you directly?
Yes. Thank you, Al. I'm on Twitter. I'm not a great social media person, but I'm on Twitter at Jay Baruch, MD. So it's the letter J. BaruchMD, and I also have a website, and it's basically www.jaybaruch.com, and it's just my name, Baruch.
Terrific. And again, the book is Tornado of Life, soon to be released, but you can certainly order it through pre-orders online, and I'm sure through your local bookstore as well. So please take the time to go out and buy this. I think you don't have to be a medical practitioner. This is really a great read for anybody that's experienced emergency room or medical issues where they had to deal with emergency room issues. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.